trouble.
Excuse me for interrupting, but maybe you would like to find out just what it would be like if there were no rules.
But how could we do that?
By going someplace where there are no rules.
Ah, there's no such place.
You're right. But maybe there is a way we could go to a place without rules by using our imagination.
This is Cybercrimeology, a podcast about cybercrime, its research, and its researchers. My name is Michael, and I've been known on occasion to have terse words with the little box that tells me that my new password is not good enough. Those password rules don't make a whole lot of sense to me a lot of the time, and some perfectly good passphrases have been reworked into forgettable messes as a result. This process can be frustrating, but at what point does the negative effects of that frustration outweigh the security benefits of the rule? Our guest for this episode is Dr. Roberta Dillon, Associate Professor at James Cook University in Singapore, and one of the authors of a recent conference paper titled Password Policy First Usability: When Do Users Go Bananas? We love learning from other research disciplines and perspectives, so it's great to hear from Dr. Dillon, who, rather than seeing security from the perspective of criminology and crime prevention, sees it from the perspective of computer games and science. I'll let him explain.
So I am a computer engineer. I did all my studies in electrical and computer engineering in Genoa, my hometown in Italy. And then I moved to Singapore about 16 years ago. But throughout, of course, the time that I grew up, I had two main passions, say, which were game development and also, of course, cybersecurity. And this is due, of course, to me being a kid who grew up in the 80s. And this means that on one side, I'm getting older. I would prefer to be younger. But the plus side of this is that I'm really the first generation of people who grew up with computers and with the digital devices. So in the early 80s, I had the Commodore 64. And this really introduced me to programming and game development. And that's why I was kind of I was very fond of it throughout the course of my life. And then in the late 80s, then I upgraded, like many other people, to a Commodore Amiga, so the 16-bit generation of computers. And there, one day, when I was playing with one of my backup copies of the games, so to say, then something strange happened, and I put in the floppy disk, and suddenly I got a notification saying, "Your computer, something wonderful has happened. Your computer is alive. You got the SEA virus." So, of course, I didn't believe my computer was alive, but I was definitely kind of scared of what's happening. So it was the first time I got infected by a virus. So this introduced me to the world of computer security. So I wanted to find more about viruses, how they were written, how they can be used, and so on. And that's where my journey started. Of course, in those days when I went into university in the early 90s, then we didn't really have anything that was specialized in either domain, whether game development or cybersecurity. So I just had to do the more traditional kind of electronic, electrical, and computer engineering courses that were available. But then when I got to my thesis, then I started getting into effective computing. And this also allowed me to get first into game design when I moved to Singapore and did research R&D on serious games and also some collaboration with some commercial companies. And then also to try to use the same approach that I was using for games. And that's where I think also in cybersecurity, we can learn a little bit about the kind of user-centered approach that is so important in games into the security world. And then I also started working into cybersecurity and now also going more, being more active in the research side.
So do you think you sort of always thought about security as sort of an interactive thing because games are very interactive?
Yes, well, I think that of course there are several common points between game design and cybersecurity in terms of curiosity and creativity in solving problems in original ways that people have to find. So there are some similar mindset that I think you need to have to be successful in either field. But what is really important is that, of course, when we talk about games, it's always about creating an experience for the player. So you always have to have your end user at the center of everything that you're doing. And in cybersecurity, sometimes I think that while we know very well that the human element is the most important one, and all the conferences in the past couple of years emphasized the human element as the weakest point in the chain that we have. But usually I see that so far, when you talk about security controls, it's always been about getting a better technical security and ensure that the controls becomes increasingly more complicated and secure. But sometimes I have the impression that people tend to forget that in the end it's always the user who has to use it and implement and follow these controls. And that's where you should try to remember maybe a little bit from game design that in the end, we should always have a user-centered approach, because ultimately it's the user that will make the system work or fail. So as long as the most important thing, I believe, is really to make, to craft an experience that is still easy to follow and natural to follow for the user, so that they are not tempted to try to do some workaround to make their life easier and then jeopardize the actual beautiful technical security control that's in place. So that's also what the paper that we are commenting on actually was all about.
Yeah, so the paper we're going to talk about is about probably one of the darling subjects of computer security and usability. It's passwords, and passwords are one of those things that everybody has an opinion on. And the National Standards Institute in the United States is sort of where a lot of those recommendations and things come from for passwords and for computer security.
Yes, so there was the original paper in 2003 on the Digital Identity Guidelines, NIST, that really pointed out all the various criteria that were considered important to craft a secure password. And of course, those criteria were relevant and are still relevant, but we see that in a way, as also the computational power of even standard PCs allow to more powerful brute force attacks, then this then requires us to make this even more complex if you really want to follow the original guidelines. And this is a problem, because then users will start try to find alternative ways to remember an increasingly complex password. So as also one of the original writers of the NIST document, William Barr, said, then all these requirements now really tend to drive people bananas, and we need to find a way that to simplify things and make things still secure, but easier for users. So, of course, I think that going forward, biometrics is probably going to be increasingly important, because it's already very important, but it's going to increase. I also see that other alternative approaches like behavioral analytics to figure out if you are really who you claim to be and so on will be even more important. But passwords are, most likely they're still going to stay, because they're really very easy and straightforward, at least theoretically speaking, way, of course, to grant access. So they're not going to disappear completely. And we need, of course, to still to find a way to keep them secure and usable, is the most important part.
So if we talk about passwords, and let's talk about 20 years ago, so early 2000s, the problem with passwords were they were too easy for hackers to hack. So a lot of places started implementing sets of rules, and that's what ended up in those guidelines that started making people go bananas. Those are the requirements you're talking about. What are some of these requirements, and how are they supposed to make your passwords better?
Well, originally, when people had to use a password, usually they just write a word or something very short. It was considered enough. Of course, this wasn't already back then. So the original NIST document proposed that every password should include lowercase characters, uppercase characters, numbers, special characters, and so on. But at that time, also, it was thought that 8 characters or so in terms of length was good enough. And then for 20 years on computer, actually, it was. But of course, as now computers are much more powerful, and we have also beautiful GPUs, and again, good for gaming, but not only for gaming, then, of course, could help a hacker to brute force a short password very easily and in a relatively short time. So then we need to increase the password length. And then with all these rules and also others were added, like not using more than 3 repeated characters or sequences, so a password that goes 1, 2, 3, 4 is automatically removed and so on. All these things do keep the password more secure, but also make the password more difficult to use and remember for users, especially when nowadays we have so many different accounts on so many different systems, or some more important than others, whether it's a work account or just something we do as online for our own personal activities. So things really became exponentially more complicated to handle the average user than they were 20 years ago. So also this was now recognized by the original writers, like our original document. So there is a need to try to figure out how to make password more usable. So it's, and it is in general nowadays, it goes, of course, the general recommendation, which was also one of the conclusion of the paper that I wrote with my colleagues, then is that passphrases are, of course, more secure than shorter, but theoretically more complicated passwords. Because, of course, the length is our friend here. So it makes it impossible to brute force it, current hardware. But of course, also a passphrase is something that needs to be done in a certain way, because it's for example, it's very easy to figure out for my Facebook or other social profile that I am a fan of, let's say, role-playing games and fantasy, and then I put as my passphrase something like "one ring to rule them all," or some other very famous quote from The Lord of the Rings. Of course, it'd be very easy to do a dictionary attack and try to break it in it anyway. So of course, that also needs to be done in a certain way. But yeah, I believe that definitely a longer passphrase, even though it doesn't have all the original requirements that were stated in the original NIST document, is actually a better approach to security and more user-friendly than a shorter but critically more complex password.
So the idea of this sort of theoretically more complex or of entropy is that the more characters that could possibly be in the password, the harder it is to guess, because it's one of a larger number of possible combinations, and the less likely it is that term is something that you could find in a dictionary or that's commonly used or is a common bad password, and anything that you could put into a list of words to try.
Yeah, of course, the entropy is extremely valid concept still now, so it's really very important. But I think we need to maybe focus more on a way that the kind of regulations that we force people to comply tends still to be a kind of user friendly. So in the paper specifically that I wrote with my colleagues from James Cook University Singapore, as well as a group of researchers from the University of Vienna in Austria, actually emphasizes the fact that people do feel that an increasingly complicated number of constraints that they have to follow then makes the password more difficult to remember. And when it becomes more so difficult to remember, let's start finding some alternative strategies, for example, write it down and remember, or save it somewhere, or really do something that significantly jeopardizes the overall security than just having even a simpler password. So the study that we did was to have an online survey where people were asked to start creating a password, simulating the process for example, creating a new password in your company internet. So you had like first to make a password with at least 8 characters. Then second rule, have to add at least one uppercase letter. Then add a number. Then add a special character. And then we asked for each of these different stages if they found that this restriction was easy to implement and adopt, whether they felt it made the password secure, if they found it so easy to comply and remember, and so on and so forth. And we wanted to study which specific point, if there was one, then the users start feeling that, oh, now this rule is a bit too much. I start getting not so comfortable then that I will remember this. And then I know that I will forget it, so I will have to take some alternative step to be sure that I don't forget too soon. And we realized that by analyzing all the replies that we got, that people start getting less comfortable when we add a special character. And then, of course, when we start asking to avoid the previous password that they used, then situation really goes downhill. So that's where really the usability of the whole system starts a bit to crumble. And when this happens, then people wrote that they use simple patterns to make still the password easy to remember, which of course this is well known. And again, is something that makes dictionary attack easier. Or then start writing it down in all possible places that they can find. Or then try to, of course, still to make it meaningful to them with some simple rules so that they can remember. So then they try to reconstruct the password. But again, these is follow some patterns that people can then try to break if they know the person and so on. There were also some kind of quite original answers we got that people try to make the password meaningful by relating them to their dreams or to their family. So there were also some quite original kind of strategies. But yeah, what came out was that essentially people try to find some, whether not just plainly writing it somewhere, just to find some sort of easy algorithm that they can remember then to reconstruct the password. But then, of course, it's a matter of cracking an easy algorithm and not the more complex password, even though it follows all the original kind of rules that were originally stated.
Like, as you're sort of building up the rules, so 8 characters, uppercase, lowercase, must have a number in it, and then you start getting to adding special characters. At that point, the friction and the frustration for people starts kicking and they start looking for coping mechanisms, other ways that they feel they can deal with it, because they, at that point, it gets hard to remember. So I thought it was interesting that those rules as well, there's sort of an increase in the security of passwords, sort of 8 letters, uppercase, lowercase, there's an increase in security. And then at some point, it doesn't really help anymore.
Yes, but that's an interesting aspect. And indeed, we see that it's very easy to see that the search space that we build by adding lowercase, then uppercase, then numbers, then special characters, of course, grows exponentially. But then, essentially, that's the top. Then what helps is actually just extending the number of characters of the password. Well, the other kind of requirements, then, like avoiding sequences or common names that you also find in some password regulation, or avoiding the previous password. Of course, these are useful trying to make the system more robust to dictionary attacks or to previous breaches, but they don't really change the search space. So it's, they don't make it bigger. So in that sense, for brute force attacks, they are not really that meaningful. So then it's really, I would say, it's better maybe to relax some of this condition and instead force a kind of longer password and the passphrase that with not so many small kind of rules. So fewer rules, but longer is what the study actually, again, recommended.
One of the issues with the NIST recommendations nearly 20 years ago is that was sort of based on common knowledge and some older documents and stuff, and not really based on science. The newer document, it's made a lot of changes, and it doesn't make recommendations about special characters and all of that kind of stuff now. And if you read the notes down the bottom of the NIST guidelines, it says try not to do those things because they can frustrate users. Can we say with some at least a little bit of evidence that increasing the restrictions on password creation does actually make people frustrated?
Well, yes, I think so. So it's that was the main finding of our paper. And really, it's quite clear then at around the 4th rule, so essentially when we start also adding special characters, people really think, okay, this kind of breaks the kind of structure and usual way I do passwords. So what do I do then? Yeah, it becomes very easy maybe just to add an exclamation mark at the end or something like that, which of course also very easy to predict and doesn't really make the password that more secure. And instead it makes then people more frustrated. And then when this happens, then people will start thinking of the workarounds, still try to adapt this new regulation to their own mindset so that it becomes easy to use. And that's really important to avoid these kind of issues, that if we start frustrating a user, then that would be an even weaker link in our security chain.
What were the strategies and what were the most common strategies that, people employed to cope with frustrating passwords?
Well, essentially, it's either writing the password down somewhere, either on pieces of paper or on a file and save it on their computer, or, of course, try to design their own algorithm that they can really recall easily and then recall their password and also make a little variation from the small variation from the previous password, which also doesn't make the password necessarily more secure in case of a breach. Because if there is a breach and people find, oh, this password was this name, and then, like a 3Q for a quarter, and then the year, they know that now the password, the new password will be the same name, like the fourth quarter of the year, and so on. So it's still very easy then to find out what the password could be, even though it follows all the original requirements that were specified. So the problem is that user will try to make their user requirements work in a good way for them so that they don't have to worry too much and get frustrated. But that's an important part, an important aspect that, of course, hackers can use and exploit to actually break the password and then break into systems.
Did you find anybody was reusing passwords?
Yes. That was a common aspect. So many people still reuse the same password across different websites. Yes, and logins. Yeah. So that's actually a very, very common practice.
And that's not a good password practice.
Absolutely not.
I'm really interested in the team that you had for this particular piece of research. I'm interested because you're based in Singapore, but half of your team or three-fifths of your team is based in Europe. And amongst your authors, you have an anthropologist and a cognitive scientist. So how does that group come together?
Yes, it was actually an interesting group to work with. It was myself, then Dr. Shelly Chawla from SU Singapore, and then we had three researchers from the University of Vienna in Austria. These are three PhD candidates, Diana Ristova, Susanna Jovicic, and Barbara Goebel. And essentially, they're doing their PhD. Again, here we come back to my background in games, actually, because I am they were consulting with me for some aspects of their PhD research, which involves gamification on social media. So they got a scholarship to come over to our campus in Singapore. And during the stay over here, then it also happened that I had the chance to do some research, not just in games, but also in cybersecurity. And I wondered if could get all together and start designing then an experiment about password. And they all were very happy about this. And really having such a diverse team really helped in having a very, very interesting brainstorming sessions where we came up with the questions for the questionnaire and how we wanted them to analyze them and get the data. And it was really a very interesting and fruitful experience, I think, for all of us. Mainly to work with such a diverse group with so many different backgrounds and really apply all these different knowledge and experiences to this specific problem.
Do you have any tips for other anthropologists or sociologists or criminologists who are trying to work with computer scientists? Is there a magic word that we can say at the start of the conversation to make everything easier?
Well, that's a difficult question. But I think that in general, communication is the key, and also to always have an open mind. So it's really important to always listen to the others, and especially with people from different backgrounds and different skills, that we need to find a way really for these skills to complement each other. And the best way to do this is really to keep an open mind and really try to communicate in an easy way with each other. So sometimes, of course, specific jargon from a different domain can kind of a bit in the way, but then it's always good to never assume anything, of course, because assumption can be very dangerous when talking to people from a different field. And then instead explain everything in a clear way, and then things will really fall into place easily if there is the will to collaborate and work together. I think that's the most important thing, and it will make things easier.
I want to circle back to that quote that you mentioned at the start from William Burr, where he said, artificial constraints on passwords just drive people bananas. And then he goes on to say, and they don't pick good passwords no matter what you do.
Yeah.
That's kind of a fatalistic assessment of how people engage with security. Do you think there's any hope for people? Would you agree with him that people are always going to pick bad passwords?
Well, I think this goes back, as I said earlier, in the sense that it's very important to have a user-centered approach. So the constraints that we give users have still to be crafted in a way that are reasonable and do not really hinder the kind of process for users to really use that specific feature. So password should be something that people do know and hopefully remember in a relatively easy way so that they don't have to do any of those dangerous workarounds, like writing it or crafting it in a very, following a very simple algorithm that they devised and so on, because all these things make the password insecure. So it's much more important that we keep the user in mind and try to make their life easier than just creating a system that is, theoretically speaking, objectively very secure, but then when someone has to use it, then they will find a way to make it insecure because they want to find an easy way actually to use it and go on to what they actually have to do for their work and so on. So it's really here the game design approach as a player-centered approach really needs to, in a way, to transfer to the domain of security and have a user-centered approach because, the human element is the most important. And we need to be sure to keep the human element secure in a way, not commit some sort of disaster and compromising the security of the system. It's really to be sure that the regulations that are in place actually help the user and are not perceived as something that instead hinder their progress or their work and make things difficult for them. So that's really very important. So I think that is still a place for passwords. We will still use them as a simple first step for authentication. But clearly other things like biometrics or user analytics, behavioral analytics that kind of analyze the user in the background in a transparent way to user will be increasingly important in future.
I think that's a great way to think about security and implementing security. The player needs to know how to play the game and what the objectives of the game are. And if you do that for them, there's a good chance they might actually succeed in winning the game, whether that game is Pac-Man or creating a password. The principles might be the same.
Yes, and even more important is that the kind of underlying game mechanics have to be perceived and understood by the player, almost in a subconscious level. So here, we don't want the user to think, okay, now I have to add another special character. I have to add another number, but not in a sequence like 7, 8, 9, but random different numbers. And, I have to add a password that is different from the last 5 that I added in this website. So which were the other 5 passwords? Maybe I remembered as well. And then we start adding one, say, no, this password was already used. And that's really what is going to frustrate users. And then either they write a really complicated password that they have to write down because they forget, or then write something that, again, is just a simple variation of the previous one, and then is easy still to figure out if there was an earlier breach. So we, in a way, the rules have to be instinctively understood and then go in the background and not really become the main point of the experience.
That's a good point to leave people with. So are you planning on doing more research on passwords?
Well, now, yes. These were actually sort of introductory studies. So we had a relatively small number of people participating, was 51. So there is definitely a margin to do more. maybe even to see if other things like a CAPTCHA or other kind of security approaches can also frustrate users or not. So there is definitely margin for future work in this field, this area. Then also now I'm working on some host-based intrusion detection system really based on users' analytics. So try to figure out how the users behave after login and really see if, well, we can say it's the real user or is someone who just came in with a password, but is a different person. So that's also an area that I'm trying to investigate. So, and other areas that I'm trying to work on is also on some kind of gamified training for cybersecurity that when I try to put my background as a game designer in this area. So there are a few things that I hope that to have the time to actually pursue and research.
I look forward to security that's as fun as a game in the future. Thanks for spending some time and helping me understand a little bit more about your research into passwords, and keep doing what you're doing.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Dr. Dillon. If you'd like to learn more, the details of the paper discussed can be found in the show notes. This has been Cybercrimeology, a podcast about cybercrime, its research, and its researchers. It's produced by me, but it's only made possible by the kind guests that share their time and their research. If you have a question or a comment, you can reach me at cybercrimeology at Twitter, or by old-fashioned email at cybercrimeology@gmail.com.